Right now, we've got Susan Brown in the studio from the Chapel Hill Public Library on what may be our final Talking Books ever here in this studio.
Dun, dun,
dun. Dun, dun, dun. Because we're moving in a week or so-ish.
Ish.
So we might be in the new place.
I'll believe it when I see it, Buster.
Yeah, it's coming quick. I am continuing to not hold my breath just because holding your breath is a silly thing to do if you're going to be doing it for.
Yeah,
because then it's just silent. Yeah, we don't need any more dead air. But,
so are you taking all this stuff in here, like this equipment right here, this apparatus?
A lot of the stuff in the new studio, and I've seen the new studio. We got new countertop. It's all nice and new. New chairs and everything. New microphones, I think. New soundboard. So there's going to be a lot of
What's
new
gonna
stuff.
What's going to happen to all this stuff?
I don't know.
Is the blue light special going with you?
The blue light. The blue light, which has been unscrewed for the last like several months because it's been going all haywire and it doesn't stop blinking.
The blue light's not going.
Yeah. So many people are listening out there who have no idea what it's talking about.
There's a blue light in front of me, and I think it means something.
It means the phone is ringing. So, because obviously we're in a studio, so we can't have a phone that goes ring, ring, ring. So we have a phone that goes blink, blink, blink instead, which is perfectly fine until the blue light just decides I'm gonna just blink whenever. So
I always wonder about those phones though on the NPR fun drives. Are those fake phone noises?
Oh yeah, someone's back there hitting a button.
Right?
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, the actual NPR phones. Go, hello, please answer the phone and give us money.
Local radio making fun of public radio. I love it. I love it.
Just for a second. All right. So.
I love local radio.
Yes, thank you.
Because I was driving over here. I was like, there's so many things that you just said right before I came on that I have to talk about.
Like the community,
we'll get
community
to books.
Read, right.
The community read.
Yes.
I did not know what their book was, but we have worked with them in the past, and I'm sure that we will, if we don't have that book, we will get it. And in the past, last year when the theme was, I think, mental illness.
Yes.
We hosted one of the events at the library. So that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were talking about festival.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out of town this past weekend, but my staff was there. We had our banned books, trading cards,
which looks
traveling
so cool.
Exhibit.
I saw that booth.
That's
yes.
Great.
Yeah.
And they talked to lots of folks. So that was super cool.
Awesome.
And I just got to say it. And so this might actually be my last appearance on the show, full stop, because I just got to say it.
Oh, no.
Go Hokies.
What?
I'm a tech grad. I'm a tech family.
No.
So I was driving over, and at first, I have to say, you, like, mentioned the game, and then you skipped right to Miami, and I was like, hang on, Buster. And then you went there.
We went back. We came back.
And I was like, do I get tickets? Do I not get tickets? Do I take my kids? And then I was glad yesterday that I didn't, because all the talk about
the storm,
and now I'm like,
right.
Maybe I should.
You just
but
go
anyways.
There with just go there with an umbrella so you can cover your face and hide your shame from the 50,000 other Tar Heel fans that are going to be there.
The only thing interfering with UNC this weekend is the tech defense. I was trying to do a weather interference.
We needed that interference on that last field goal, though.
That's right. So
otherwise,
anyways,
it would have been a 69-yarder, and I don't think you would have made that.
I would maybe, like, wear my tech shirt and maybe a little UNC pin or something. I mean, if it were any other team, I'd be rooting for the Tar Heels.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I've got my team that I root again, that I root for over the Tar Heels too. So everyone needs their one, I guess.
Go Hokies.
There's another one.
The last thing is, the world is such a small place. It is such a small place. So this very morning on the Facebook,
yes,
a dear friend of mine, one of my dearest friends, he actually started out in Durham at Sugar Hill Records. He now lives in California with movie stars and swimming pools and all of that, and he works in the music industry. He works in the music industry, and we have very similar taste in music. Bluegrass, old country, Americana, and just this very morning on Facebook, he posted about how he had scored this really great new re-release of Terry Allen's music from this label called Paradise of Bachelors.
Which Carolina Connection just
like,
did the story
on. I love
on.
Terry Allen. I have to look this up. And then I'm driving over here and they're talking. And I didn't realize that this label is here in Chapel Hill. And now my mind is just completely blown.
Yeah.
Completely blown. And I totally want to talk to these guys.
You can.
It's awesome.
They're just down the road.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's super cool.
And there's,
take that, NPR. That's, they can't do that.
They're probably doing a story on them too, though, of course.
It's cool, though.
And then the other story, which I wanted to hold off until you got here, which is that the air horn orchestra that gathers out in front of Governor McCrory's mansion in Raleigh every Wednesday at 6:30 and blows air horns in protest of House Bill 2. They're doing it again tonight.
Uh-huh.
But on November 2nd, or the Wednesday before Election Day, they're going to try to break the Guinness World Record for most air horns simultaneously. And they're going to have a representative from Guinness on hand. So, like, protesting against House Bill 2 has reached the world record.
Wow.
The wacky world record level now.
That's pretty great. I didn't know about the air horn orchestra.
Oh, yeah.
There was a group in Lawrence, Kansas, also known for wacky stunts. I think it was in Lawrence. They did, it was a community concert every year, and it was Handel's Messiah on kazoo. It was pretty great.
That's awesome.
It was pretty great.
Did they do anything else on kazoo, or did everyone just get together and play the one song and then leave?
I think that was it. I mean, okay. That's a mic drop or a kazoo dropping moment, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you don't start with Handel's Messiah. You start with, like, Night on Bald Mountain or something like that, and then gradually work your way up to...
What's Night on Bald Mountain?
Dun, 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 dun. There's a band at Festival that played a
20s
swing dancing version of Night on Bald Mountain, which was awesome. But,
nice.
Which is why I had it in my head. But anyway, that's happening. So let's talk books. What's going on?
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we're segueing into it because our topic is debates. Did you watch the vice presidential debate?
I did not.
That's good. Neither did I. Good night, everybody.
All righty, then.
All right.
Good show, Aaron. See you
next
week.
Good.
No,
yeah.
I did not, but what a great prompt.
Yeah.
Because other people did.
Right,
probably,
right.
Maybe.
The vice president, I have a friend who is in political science who does research and did a study of the vice presidential choice, like and how much it actually affects the outcome of the election. And we always talk about this, like before the vice presidential nomination is made, there's all of this talk in the media and all this obsession about, oh, who is Hillary Clinton going to pick? Who is Donald Trump going to pick? If she picks this person, it's going to completely ruin her campaign. And if she picks this person, she's guaranteed to win. But it turns out, and I don't know what the methodology is on this, but the vice presidential choice actually only affects the outcome of the popular vote by maybe 1% or less every single time. And that's even true for like those really high profile, provocative vice presidential choices like Sarah Palin only affected the outcome by 1% at the end of the day. So the vice presidential choice, when it comes to the outcome of the election and are you going to vote for this person or that person, the choice, the identity, the debate, none of that really matters all that much, as it turns out. So I was on my phone
while you were talking because there was a book that I was... No, I was trying
as
to remember...
As was everyone else.
I was trying to remember the subtitle of a book. So talking about that and how it's really negligible.
It's
like February. negligible.
It doesn't make a difference.
It just doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't matter.
Impact on the results. There's a book. We don't have it in our collection, but I was looking around about books about the vice presidency and books about debates. And there's one which is The American Vice Presidency, / From Irrelevance to Power. I'm not really sure about that. I mean, I don't know how powerful irrelevance, maybe. I don't know. Uh-huh.
Cheney was powerful.
Yeah.
Gore did stuff. Biden did stuff.
Gore invented the internet.
He didn't do it while he was vice president, though. He did that before.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So that was our prompt.
So books about debates is our
and
prompt, political
I will
or otherwise.
True confession.
Uh-oh.
I was a debate nerd.
Oh, so was I.
Were you?
Oh, no. Now we're dueling debate nerds. How big of a debate
Switch
nerd
side.
Were you? What?
Lincoln Douglas, which side? What did you do?
Oh, policy.
Policy
like the super fast, high-speed, rocket science kind of stuff.
Of course you did.
Of course.
Awesome.
I went to summer debate camp twice.
Oh, you win. Oh, God, you win.
Spartan Debate Institute at Michigan State, junior and senior year of college.
I did little pockets of all the nerd. Like, I was involved in all the nerd tribes. Like,
awesome.
A little bit of debate, a little bit of forensics.
I did forensics, too.
I flirted with Model UN.
We didn't have Model UN, but
that was a good time.
That was fun.
I mean, and it's in, like, Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Curtamen was the thing. And
I don't even know what that is.
I don't even know either, but I remember that word. It was really just an excuse to get out of class.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately.
Okay, so what did you do in forensics? For people who don't know, forensics is not forensic science. It's like oral interpretation and public speaking events.
So there was poetry, there was
and there's
prose,
like 15 different categories.
Spelling,
dramatic, there was spelling?
I think spelling was one.
How do you do spelling?
I mean, I did spelling too. Maybe
like
that
dramatic
was
spelling?
So
like,
guess what I did in forensics? What was my event?
You were, okay, so you just listed a lot of like oral interpretation stuff. So
that
you were on
not
that side
them.
Of things.
Right, right, right.
I'm going to say storytelling.
Extemporaneous speaking.
Oh,
boom!
My.
Also the art and science of BS. That's what I did.
Extemporaneous, you get a topic and you have 30 minutes to prepare a 5-minute speech, right?
Yeah.
My forensics teacher tried to get me into that for 4 years.
You would
and
have been
failed.
Great at it.
What do you think I did?
I don't know.
I started an oratory,
right?
Which is persuasive speaking, and like I was the Renaissance man. I did oratory, I did prose, I did a piece from Forrest Gump, which went over really
sweet.
Well. We went to state finals in multiple. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Okay, you totally
People who
win.
Don't know forensics have no idea
forensics
what we're talking about.
Awesome.
It's public speaking and oral interpretation.
Okay.
Anyway.
So debates. And such things is our prompt. So the first book that I want to recommend, and there's actually a second edition out of it. It is called Thank You for Arguing. It's by Jay Heinrichs. And the subtitle is What Aristotle, Lincoln, and Homer Simpson Can Teach Us About the Art of Persuasion.
Awesome.
It is awesome. So this guy, he was an executive and a writer for magazines, but he's a super nerd about rhetoric and the history of rhetoric and persuasion. But it's not at all academic. So he talks about the history of it, and he really does go back to Aristotle, and he goes to Daniel Webster and to Homer Simpson. In the updated edition, he includes Obama, but he talks about how these people's arguments and debates and talks work, and then he talks about how you can sort of learn from them and use that in your arguments, debates, conversations.
That's really cool.
It's really great. It's
what's
a great book.
You've read it. What's the best lesson that you took from it?
Gosh, I'll have to think about that one.
Okay.
It's been a while. I was trying to remember the Homer Simpson piece of it. I think it's Homer and Marge talking.
Okay.
And how, like, what you can learn from Homer Simpson's rhetoric with his family. But he also gives you really practical things like how to control the mood, how to control the tense of the argument. He's got the whole thing about Jefferson and like getting the like high ground and all of that. It's really great. I haven't read it recently enough to pick a favorite, but it's a great book. You would dig it.
That sounds exactly right up my alley. Okay, thank you for arguing. I've got a nonfiction book, but I'm going to hold off on it. I was thinking about novels that had debates.
I was too, and that was tough.
I came up with two, so I'm going to recommend them both together and save my cool nonfiction recommendation for a little bit later. But my two recommendations that I came up with for fictional novels about debates, Animal Farm by George Orwell. So what's his name? Squealer the Pig?
Is
that his name?
So.
Squeaker. I think it's Squealer. Right. Squeaker is more of a mouse, I think. I don't think there's
a
pig named Squeaker.
Laverne and Shirley.
Maybe.
I'm not sure which. Go ahead. That's squeaky.
Yeah, but like the persuasive techniques of Squealer in Animal Farm, and also Lord of the Flies by William Golding, which is a surprising lot of that book is kids sitting around in a circle arguing with each other.
Right.
So. And
I like
use
it.
Of persuasive techniques to convince other people.
Right.
So I like both of those.
Okay. So I've got two more that are somewhat in the same vein of the first book that I talked about. Popular nonfiction written for the everyman audience. However, they're both controversial in and of themselves, much like all of the controversy with politics right now and debate. So I'm going to talk about two books very quickly. One is a book called How We Decide by Jonah Lehrer, and it's a really interesting book. So he basically uses what we've learned about neuroscience to look at how we make choices, how poker players make choices, how hedge fund managers make choices, and it's like this very scientific look at how we decide A versus B, Coke versus Pepsi. It's a really interesting book. The controversy with him is he's been very controversial and sort of he's like the black sheep of the journalism world, because he was, a lot of his sources weren't, like, he made up sources, and he was one of those names in the past few years. A lot of his books have been pulled. They're out of print. So it's tricky to recommend it. He had, there were lots of questions about his content. So I recommend the book with hesitation. The other one that I want to recommend is interesting. It's brand new, and it's called Winning Arguments. And the subtitle is What Works and Doesn't Work in Politics, the Bedroom, the Courtroom, and the Classroom. This one's a little bit controversial because the author is Stanley Fish. And with his tenure in Durham at Duke in the English department, it was very controversial.
Yeah.
It's a very quick book, or it's a short book. And what's great about it is it's less about winning arguments and the technicalities of, like, how to, but it's more about a celebration of arguing and how argument is necessary and good and required for progress. And he includes, it's brand new out, he includes stuff about Donald Trump and sort of, so this came out in the past couple months, and he talks about how Donald Trump was leading up to getting the nomination, how he was doing it.
Okay.
And so it's a very interesting book. The author is a little bit controversial, but it's called Winning Arguments. We have it. It's brand new out.
And that's his shtick, too, right? Like the idea of politics as being a good thing in and of itself, and arguing without necessarily assuming that there's a right answer to the question, because if you assume that, then you'll never be able to make progress beyond.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I do like to argue.
Yeah. Arguing is good. Oh, crap. We agreed. Shoot. Wait. Virginia Tech sucks.
You're going down. Sorry. Okay.
All right. So I got one more, and it is a book about, I was trying to think of classic debates in American history, and I thought about presidential debates, and then I thought about the Lincoln-Douglas debates. But then I keep coming back to one of my favorite topics, which is the constitutional ratification debate. When the Constitution was written.
That's everybody's favorite topic.
Isn't it?
We were just talking about that at the breakfast table this morning. I can't even say that sentence without laughing. Aaron, go ahead. Sorry.
But it's fascinating that the Constitution was written in 1787, and then it's up to the 13 states to ratify it in constitutional conventions. And the fights that they had in every single one of the states were just legendary. Like, we completely forget about it now because we just take the Constitution for granted. Oh, how could anyone oppose it? But the fights were just huge over the Constitution in all 13 states. There was, I mean, we had the convention in Hillsborough just up the road, where North Carolina delegates showed up in Hillsborough and voted no on the Constitution, or said not yet until there's a Bill of Rights, but basically voted no, and then we ratified it later. But the best story is in Pennsylvania, where there were Federalists and there were Anti-Federalists, and you needed a quorum in the ratification convention in order to vote at all. So the Federalists had the majority, but they didn't have enough to constitute a quorum. So the Anti-Federalists, the opponents, just left. They walked out of the convention. So they didn't have a quorum. They couldn't vote unless they went out into the streets of Philadelphia, found the Anti-Federalists, and physically dragged them kicking and screaming back to the convention, which is what they did. And, like, got, like, physically forced enough bodies into the room so that there was a quorum, and then they voted, and that's how Pennsylvania ratified the Constitution.
I love it. Were there air horns involved?
There should have been.
Right?
I don't think the technology was there yet, but I think Ben Franklin was actively working on it at the time.
And there's a book in there somewhere?
There is a book that was released a few years ago, which, unfortunately, this is a recommendation that I have to be tentative about because I haven't read it, but it's a comprehensive book about the debate written by a good scholar, so it's got to be a really good book, and it's worth checking out. Pauline Maier is her name, M-A-I-E-R, and the book is called Ratification, The People Debate the Constitution, and it is so worth checking out because just anything about the ratification debate is worth checking out because this is such a fascinating and untold, untalked about story, just the craziness of this debate. Like, as controversial as the Constitution was, you try to imagine getting something like it passed today, it wouldn't even be possible, but the fighting and everything, and this epic debate that goes on between James Madison and Patrick Henry in Virginia, and, like, people being dragged through the streets in Pennsylvania, and all of this crazy stuff that was happening all the same time.
So I'm just saying, for everybody out there listening, there was any doubt who is the king of all the nerds?
It's me.
Who's the nerd, one nerd to rule them all, whether debate or constitutional history? Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner.
Oh, there That's are people awesome. At UNC right now who are writing their dissertations
no, I'm
on this.
Giving you grief, but I love it. I love it when people are just like so into the thing that might be obscure but super important.
Yes.
Okay, I got one more.
Okay,
Do
go
we have
for
time?
It. Yes, go
okay.
for it.
So I was trying to think about fiction, right? Like you did. And at first I thought, my mind turned to movies. And then I was like, what are great debate scenes in movies? And I kept thinking about, it's not really a debate. It's more like they're shouting their speeches at each other, which is kind of like a debate right now.
Right.
I was thinking of Election, which is Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick. Such
yep.
a great movie. Mm-hmm. That's actually based on a book. Tom Perata, and it's a really great satire of politics set in high school with a run for the class presidency. So that was one. But then what I really thought of, I veered off into vice president. So the book that I want to recommend is called Without Fail, and it's by Lee Child. So Lee Child, you know, writes the Jack Reacher books. He sold like 100 billion books worldwide. They did the movies with Tom Cruise, which I think is kind of weird because Jack Reacher in the books is like 6'4".
I mean, what's the difference between 6'4 and 4'3 in the first place?
So the first Jack Reacher book that I ever read was called Without Fail. And the premise of it, so Jack Reacher is the main character. He's this ex-MP military guy who's like now this drifter. And he just wants to drift around the States and like listen to jazz and meet women and
like
go
do.
On
yeah,
with his
of course.
Life. And every time he stops in a town, he falls into some intrigue. So in this book, he's in D.C. and he's hired by the Secret Service to basically try and penetrate the security around the vice president. And as he goes into it, he realizes there's an actual threat against the vice president. And it was what got me hooked on these books. They're so good. There's many, many, many of them. But I wanted to include some fiction, and that's not about debates, but it's about vice presidents. And
okay,
Lee Child is coming to the Carolina Theater in November.
Oh, perfect.
Which I don't do the fangirl thing very much. I will totally be there
nice.
In the front row.
The movie, the sequel's coming. The movie sequel's
coming out.
It is coming
out,
right?
soon. I did not
but
see the first one.
But you're less excited about the movies.
I didn't even see the first one. The books are really good, though.
My roommate loves the
really
first
good.
Jack Reacher book.
The first one is super good.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the last couple, but there's like 25 now.
Okay.
But Without Fail,
without
it's all
fail.
About the vice presidency.
Awesome. All right, cool. So so check that out and all the other books and visit ChapelHillPublicLibrary.org for more information about the library. Susan Brown, we got to let you go. Thank you so much.
See ya.